This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50, plus 2 years of Charisma, which costs around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now, let me repeat. You get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of Charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I'll repeat it, but the good thing about a podcast is you can back it up and listen to it again. Is trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope you'll take advantage of this offer. Even if you have read the books, you know, it's always nice to have a new book, especially one signed by the author. It makes a good birthday present. Later in the year, it'll make a good Christmas present. And I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with Charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report, and here's my episode.
Welcome to The Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
It's been 6 decades since Fidel Castro took over as dictator of Cuba. And Cuba has never been the same. Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang. And this week, I visited Havana, Cuba. I went as a tourist. And I'm just interested in what's happening spiritually, because even though Cuba is a communist country, even though it's still repressed economically in many ways, there are changes. And my guest today is Russell Black, who is I'll call him a missionary to Cuba. A contact that I had through my sister-in-law, Rosella Ridings, who visited Cuba on kind of a missions trip recently and put us in touch. So welcome, Russell, and thank you for taking time to be on my Strang Report podcast today. And what I'm interested in is kind of an update on what's happening spiritually in Cuba, because when I found out I was going down, of course, I was inquiring what stories I might run into, who I might be able to meet. It ended up that I was not able to meet anyone, but I knew that talking to you would actually give me and my readers and listeners an up-to-date report on what God is doing in Cuba.
Yes, sir. Great to be with you today on the podcast. I've been working in Cuba since October 1993. I've never been able to live there. My intention was to live there full time, but they're very restrictive on missionaries in Cuba, especially American citizens. So I tried everywhere I could to get in, and I couldn't. So I live about as close as you can. I live in south of Miami here, and I travel in on a very regular basis. And it's been just an amazing experience to see what God's been doing in Cuba, really for almost 30 years. It seems like it really started almost sovereignly as an outpouring of the Holy Spirit close to the time that the Soviet Union fell. And God began to visit the country in little pockets of outpourings. And from what I can gather, there had been a charismatic experience, even amongst the Methodists, going back even to the late 50s. And, of course, there were some classical Pentecostal denominations as well. But after Castro took over, then there was a repression that took place. Over half the pastors left the country. Many pastors felt like there was going to be some sort of situation similar to what happened in the Soviet Union or China. Ultimately, the decade of the 60s was very difficult, but never came to a place that they actually on a big scale shut down churches. The government came in and society changed. A lot of the pastors left, and there was an overall, you know, a bad feeling towards Christians. So many people just walked away from the church, and for almost 30 years, the church was depressed. Attendance just dropped to almost nothing. And then starting around 1989, God began to just sovereignly visit the church. There was a remnant that had held on for all those many, many years. And I think they just prepared a place for the Holy Spirit to come in. And there was places for 6 months the Holy Spirit would just fall so powerfully upon the believers that miracles became so commonplace that they didn't even get surprised by them anymore. One of the places that really poured out is in the western part of the country, and the Lord just began to visit, especially this man that ultimately became the bishop of the Methodist Church. And for 6 months in his small church in the provincial capital of Pinar del Rio, they would have on the weekends like 8 services just to fit all the people in. They'd have to hand out tickets first thing in the morning to tell people what time they could come back to service during the day. And it would be such a visitation that the traffic would be shut down outside the church. And literally thousands of people were healed and saved. And it came to a place at one time that they actually began to send people from the local hospital, hopeless cases that medically they couldn't do anything for them. They said, "We don't know anything else we can do for you, but there's this church down the street that God is healing people. So why don't you go visit that church?" And so that seemed to happen there and in other pockets spread across the country. And there was an awakening that took place. And it came right along the same time that the Soviet Union fell. When the Soviet Union pulled out of Cuba, there became a very difficult economic time for the country, and the government had to pull back, and they lost a lot of the really heavy control they had. And at the same time, God began to visit, and the churches began to get filled up again. After 30 years of very small gatherings, even in big churches, the churches began to have such a great outpouring that it was standing room only. And it happened especially amongst the youth. And one of the things that I've learned is that at one time, maybe in the late 70s or maybe in the early 60s, Fidel Castro said, "If you give me one generation, I will wipe off of their memory all thoughts of God." And it's like that was a challenge to God. He said, "Watch what I do." And really, the great revival of Cuba that's going on almost 30 years has been a revival, especially amongst the youth. And today, the churches are just overflowing, standing room only, multiple services in many churches. And miracles, healings, lives transformed, alcoholics, you know, people with very rough backgrounds getting transformed. So it's been just an incredible experience to see this happening even today. And I've seen ups and downs, starts and stops in this, but the last time I was in is 6 weeks ago, and it seems like everyone is expecting a fresh wave of the Holy Spirit to come through with a great harvest again there. So that's kind of a synopsis of what's been happening over these last 25 plus years that I've been going in.
Well, that's very interesting. And, you know, I remember as a child hearing about what was going on in Cuba. I'm old enough to remember that I was pretty young, but there was a, you know, a revolution that took place and the communists came within 90 miles of Key West, Florida. That's how far Havana is. And my family moved from the Midwest to Florida in September of 1962, and that was approximately a month before what we call the Cuban Missile Crisis. And when I was in Havana this week, we saw some guns and different things that they had there that they say were, you know, from that era, some missiles, I guess, on kind of display to remember it. The Bay of Pigs failed invasion happened along in that time, I guess a little bit before the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I can remember everyone in Florida was very, very concerned, you know, about the potential of nuclear war. And thankfully, that was averted. But in Florida, we have a lot of Cuban refugees, a lot more in Miami where you live than in Central Florida where I live. But when I was in college, I dated a girl whose parents were refugees. In fact, I think she was born in Cuba. I think she was a pretty little girl when she came over. Her mother, I remember, spoke almost no English back then. But, I mean, we were very aware of all of this happening. The emotion down here was very strong. And my impression was that Fidel Castro was unusually brutal as communist dictators go, because communism in different parts of the world, like in Albania, seemed to be a whole lot worse than it was in places like even the Soviet Union, where they had at least a measure of religious freedom. And apparently Castro allowed some freedom, but as you say, church attendance went down to practically nothing. They tried to stamp out Christianity, which in Cuba is mostly Roman Catholic. The Pentecostals are down there, of course, and Pentecostalism today is a force all through Latin America, but you say it started... Isn't it interesting? It started about the time that the Soviet Union fell, and I've heard reports. I know the Assemblies of God has really tried to reach Cuba, and I've been in services where missionaries came back. In fact, in one service I remember, there were maybe a bunch of Cuban pastors that had been allowed into the United States to attend, and they had like a choir. I remember it was very moving service. And then I would hear about people like you who would go back and forth. Even my sister-in-law, Rosella, you know, in more recent days, made what she kind of considered a, you know, a missionary trip to see what she could do to help. And I had always wanted to go to Cuba, but, you know, the United States made it very difficult for Americans to go. And there was an embargo against Cuba financially. We wouldn't import cars. And, you know, Cuba's become famous for its 1950s American cars because, you know, they got no more cars after that. You know the situation a whole lot more than I do, but it was just interesting to go in as a tourist with a lot of stereotypes and to kind of see it. But one thing that struck me when I woke up and we had just docked in the port there, they call it the San Francisco port, is I looked out my window of my stateroom, I guess you call it, and I could see churches. There was a Russian Orthodox church with a gold dome. There were several cathedrals, you know, that were very, very old. And so I could tell that Castro had not totally stamped out religion in Cuba.
Right. Yeah. It was surprising to me as well, even from the day I arrived in October of 93, that the churches were still functioning. You know, I've studied a lot about what happened in Russia and China. And from what I've gathered after a while was that Christianity was discouraged, but it wasn't prohibited. And the churches, other than a few small cases, the churches were allowed to function, and there were very few churches shut down. So, interestingly as well, is that during the 1950s, there was a pretty big missions effort made, especially from the United States, some from Canada, to go in and plant churches. And thank God for that, because many of those churches were the ones that were planted and continued to work throughout the last 60 years. And one of the rules that the Castro regime brought down was that you could have a church, and whatever the church looked like, whatever it functioned as before the revolution in 1959, it could continue to do that. But one of the big restrictions was that they could not build or even make repairs to churches for many years. Much of that's changed now. Actually, because of that, a whole semi-underground church planting movement started, and literally thousands of churches were planted in homes, and even homes were bought just to become new churches. And for the most part, except for some resistance and some retaliation from the government, many of those churches have been allowed to continue. And someone told me a few years ago that before Castro took over, there was roughly 800 Protestant churches in all of Cuba, and that today, and this was actually a statistic given by the Ministry of Religious Affairs in Cuba, that there was over 10,000 churches today. So once again, because of repression and persecution, instead of decreasing, it actually increased from roughly 800 to over 10,000 today. And I don't think they really have a good handle on how many there are today as a whole. But another interesting fact about Cuba is that, just like many of the countries in Latin America, the Catholic Church was predominant. I would say probably 90% of the population were practicing Catholics. And one of the differences in Cuba was all religious activity was discouraged throughout the early years of the communist revolution. And on the other side, when things began to open up again, the Catholic Church had diminished significantly, and then God began to pour his spirit out on the Protestant churches. And I would say there are probably more practicing evangelical Protestant Christians in Cuba today than there are Catholic believers. And by and large, vast majority of those believers are charismatic Pentecostals as well. an interesting thing is that the Methodist Church in Cuba is full-blown Pentecostal charismatic in its expression, and about half of the Baptist Church in Cuba as well, and the Nazarenes as well. So it really, much of the church growth has come through an outpouring of the Holy Spirit, people accepting that and experiencing, enjoying the power of God in that way.
Well, that's exciting, and I'm hoping to meet and interview someday the bishop of the Methodist Church, who is a very dynamic person, I'm told. I wasn't able to meet him in Cuba this week. But as we kind of wrap up this podcast, I just want to tell my listeners kind of a personal story, which, Russell, I know you know this story already, but in 1933, at the height of the Depression, my in-laws were married. Their names were Harvey and Rose Farrell. They were married in June of 1933. And my father-in-law was a fiery 21-year-old Pentecostal preacher. And he went around Florida preaching. And he and his new bride went down to Key West and held a series of meetings and helped that church get established. And then they went down on the train. And in Cuba, they boarded a ship and went over to Havana and met with some pastors there. They had almost no money, and they evangelized. And while they were there, Batista had a revolution and took over the government. And the revolution was such that they were stuck in Cuba. They could not leave for a couple of months, at least that's what the family story is. And so, of course, as I married into the family, you know, I heard this story. And then in the late 1950s, they went back to Cuba. And this was not long before Fidel Castro took over from Batista. And of course, he was far, far worse. I think history will prove that he was far, far worse than Batista ever was. So it's just been very interesting that my own family had some connection to Cuba. And, you know, hopefully they did some good spiritually. Only eternity will ever know. But there's a special place in our hearts for Cuba. And I know that Rosella really enjoyed going. And she is so complimentary of you and your ministry and all the things that are going on. And as we wrap this up, I just want you to repeat a couple of things that you told me on the phone as we were getting acquainted, especially about how they use sports for evangelism down there in Cuba.
Yeah, about 20 years ago, I connected with a man who's now become really my best friend. He was a really high-level baseball player and got radically born again. And at the height of his career, at 22 years old, he was a pitcher from one of the big teams in Cuba. He resigned and said, all I want to do is live for God and serve him. And so he went through ministry school that they had there. And when he graduated, he said, what do I do now? And God says, what do you know how to do? He says, all I know how to do is preach and play baseball. He says, that's exactly what you're going to do. And so I met him in 1999, and he told me his vision to start going across Cuba with sports evangelism. And soon after that, I connected with a man named Johnny Johnson from Ocala, Florida, whose son was a first-round draft pick for the Texas Rangers. And God had just touched his heart for Cuba. And long story short, we began to take several Major League Baseball players down, and they used their contacts to begin to get really high-level, excellent equipment. And once again, God just orchestrated this whole thing where we were providing the best equipment known to sports for these valiant evangelists. And long story short, 20 years later, probably in the neighborhood of 300,000 people have come to Christ through this ministry in Cuba. And over 1 million people have been evangelized as far as hearing the gospel. And much of it has been followed by signs and wonders. And now we're working with 28 different denominations in Cuba and over 500 churches. Even this month of April, we've had an outreach to over 25,000 kids, and God's just doing amazing things. And now we're opening up ministries in Peru, El Salvador, Dominican Republic, doing the same thing, training people. They're coming into Cuba to get training, and we're going into those countries as well with Cubans to go into those countries. And to me, it's just an amazing example of how man might shut a door, but God opens doors, and there's no door that God can't open. And he can even take Cubans from a country under, you know, communist domination and take them to be light and salt throughout the world. So it's just been an incredible journey to see how God's done this. And
You know, if I just finish with this to say, about 12 or 14 years ago, Rick Joyner had a dream, and he published this dream, and it was a dream that he had about a revival breaking out in Cuba that was going to really touch the entire nation. And he went on to say that the entire nation would be so touched that Cuba would become a Christian nation. And then it would become a missions force to bring revival throughout the Western Hemisphere. And so we've been sharing that vision. I've met with Rick on several occasions. Last time I was with Rick a couple years ago, he said that God showed him that Cuba was actually going to be used by God to really spark a fresh revival in Russia as well. So not only are we focusing on Cuba and reaching Cuba, but Cuba is actually focusing on reaching other parts of the world as well. And that's what God does. It's just a powerful experience.
Boy, that's exciting. And I know many of my listeners and readers are going to want to connect with your ministry. So if somebody wants to connect with Russell Black, how do they reach you?
I think the best way, we have a website called latinimpact.org, latinimpact.org. That's one way. They can also reach me by my email, russkerry@me.com. That's R-U-S-S-K-E-R-R-Y at M-E.com. And just connect with us, reach out to us, and we'll see where it can go from there. We have a lot of opportunities to get involved. And let me tell you, I've spoken to some pastors of mega churches, and they have some great things going. But I told them, I said, there's no place in the world that I know of today that you can really see an impact with a real small amount of finances. So, I mean, we're seeing, last year we saw 33,000 people come to Christ in Cuba with a budget of about $35,000. So we're just seeing God move in powerful ways. And we appreciate prayer. Prayer makes all the difference in the world. And any other way that people want to get involved, we'd love to begin to start a conversation about that as well.
Boy, that's exciting. And I want to thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to update us on Cuba. Of course, with my trip this week, it really got me much more interested in Cuba, and I hope that the Lord opens a door for me to go back, maybe as a, let's say, as a journalist, although I guess I would probably go in some other fashion since they don't really have freedom of the press there. But just to see and to be able to report more fully on what God is doing there, because we don't get many good reports out of Cuba. We don't hear much. And, of course, our own secular media has no interest, or they're not even aware of what's happening. So thank you for, in a way, giving us this exclusive report. And it's so encouraging to hear that when things look so bleak, and even when the government is a brutal dictatorship like Fidel Castro, that God still moves and that there's a great revival going on in this communist nation.
Yes, sir. And listen, I'd love to talk to you about taking you again into the country and letting you meet these leaders firsthand and letting people know what God's doing there. And hopefully we can talk about that soon. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share this with you guys today.
So I encourage my listeners to get hold of Russell Black, and if you feel so led to support his ministry. And thank you for your time again and for giving us really an exclusive report on what God is doing in Cuba. This is Stephen Strang. Thank you for listening to the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.